Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Goodwin gets a crossing, takes a deflection, and it's on target!
Get out!
Mitch Duke gets his head onto it for Australia. Craig Goodwin had a look up, he saw the cross, took a touch, played it in, had a slight deflection, and Mitch Duke, Australia's Duke, nods it home.
Yes, the Duke of West Sydney, Mitchell Duke, scoring for the Socceroos against Tunisia at the FIFA World Cup. Joining us from West Island to talk this and a few other things from an Australian point of view is Pete Fairburn. Morning, Pete. How are you?
G'day, Ricardo. Going well, mate. Still reveling in the success of the Socceroos over there in Qatar. What a wonderful moment and a first win in a World Cup competition for 12 years for the Socceroos, so fairly significant.
Yeah, very significant, mate. After that France game, I thought you guys were toast, but all to play for. You got to get a result against the Danes to get through to the round of 16. I still think you'd be underdogs, but the fact that you're still in it with one game in the group stages to go has got to be pleasing for Australian football fans.
Well, Ricardo, I think Aussie football fans would have bit your hand off if you offered them the situation we're in heading into this Denmark game. To be brutally honest, you know, you look at the squad that we've taken over to Qatar, and most people would say it's probably the weakest squad the Socceroos have ever taken to a World Cup on paper. It was a pretty arduous qualifying campaign and took right into the last minute in a penalty shootout against Peru and really headed over there with fairly low expectations. I thought against the French in our opening game, we got found out pretty early, and the gap in class was pretty obvious. And you had, you know, young Nathaniel Atkinson, for example, playing at right back, being, you know, absolutely taken for a ride by Kylian Mbappe, as you'd expect he would. A young guy, you know, predominantly A-League experience against one of the greatest players in the world. And heading into that Tunisia contest, they'd been pretty staunch against the Danes themselves to draw in the opening match. So expectations were relatively low, but a fantastic finish from, you know, a bit of a journeyman really in Mitch Duke, a 32-year-old striker playing in the Japanese second division who likewise has spent most of his career in the A-League. It was a fantastic finish, really, really class. And then a couple of outstanding individual performances. I thought Harry Soutar at centre-back, coming off the back of an ACL injury that's really seen him play very little football over the last 15, 16 months with Stoke over there in the English Championship. He was iconic, putting his body on the line and throwing himself around. You'd never guess he's a couple of months back from such a serious injury. He was fantastic. And look, Tunisia didn't take their chances. They had a couple of good chances, but they weren't able to take advantage. And as you say, we head into a game where we will be the underdogs against Denmark, rightfully so. They've been, you know, a pretty good international team for a number of years. We saw what they did at the Euros just a couple of years ago, but if we could try and hold on, I think Australia would definitely be looking to park the bus fairly early doors. Not what this World Cup needs, another nil-all draw, but if we could manage to secure that and find our way through to the round of 16, I think we'd reflect on it as a massive overachievement.
Yeah, what's it like in Australia at the moment? I mean, normally you guys are busy celebrating AFL or rugby league or cricket, and everything else takes a back seat. But in terms of what's dominating chat around the water cooler and what's dominating the papers and the news at the moment, is it the Socceroos?
Yeah, absolutely it is. There's real football fever. I think every football fan or any sports fan anywhere in the world has had to wrestle with how they feel about all the horrible things, you know, related to this World Cup and where it's being held and the people who are holding it. And people have genuinely had to take stock of that. The Socceroos were one of the teams who made a really strong stand pre-tournament and came out with a video talking about all the things that they felt strongly about, you know, relative to Qatar hosting this World Cup. That being said, I think people have decided to view the matches on their merit and view them as a sporting contest. And it's not to ignore the political side of things, but it's just to separate the two, just like the players have done. And, we've been very lucky to have, the Rugby League World Cups recently, the T20 World Cup. There's been a lot happening, the Spring Carnival, but all of that's kind of come to a standstill now. And it's absolutely the Socceroos, who are gaining all the attention at the moment. And, yeah, people are really excited to see how they might go.
Yeah, all right. Well, we'll keep an eye on how they do go and see if they can progress against the Danes. We should talk to the Wallabies. It's been a real mixed bag, I guess is the right way to put that, Northern Tour. I mean, the opening game when you lost by a point to France, I think Dave Rennie probably banked some kudos for that result, even though it was a loss, because the French, I think everybody expected them to dominate. Then backed that up by losing to Italy, where he was one step forward, two steps back. A close loss to Ireland, and now a come-from-behind win against Wales. I mean, you were down, what, 34-13 and won that 37-34 somehow. So, I mean, Dave Rennie, it's a roller coaster ride with the Wallabies at the moment. Where does he currently sit?
Yeah, look, I think firstly you've got to recognise what a backs against the wall victory that was. And that's one that'll go down in history as a really gutsy Aussie win. Look, the Welsh aren't a great team. We know that. And at the moment, you know, we've certainly got a few improvements to make to be considered a great team as well. But you've got to take your chances. We haven't really done that on this tour. We were really fortunate to beat Scotland in our only other win on tour when they Blair Kinghorn missed a pretty kickable penalty to win it for them right at the end. As you say, we lost to Italy, France, Ireland by combined 5 points against those three matches. And, you know, it's great to look at it and say you're competing against some of the best teams in the world. To get that close is something to be proud of. But you've got to be clinical. And you've got to win when it really matters, especially heading into a World Cup next year. So what we've been able to do against the Welsh, coming from so far back with, basically, you could put together a 23 of missing Wallabies players at the moment that would probably be stronger on paper than the one that was selected. And that's across injuries, but also across our players who weren't eligible for selection due to this being outside the test window. So your Marika Korobetis, Bernard Foley's, Will Skelton's, you throw in all your injured players and all of a sudden, you know, there are fairly mitigating circumstances that have us sitting in the position we are heading into the World Cup. That being said, jury's out on Dave Rennie. I've been a supporter of his since long before his appointment, and I think he's done some good things. But there's a lot of uncertainty around, particularly selection. No more so than in the halves where, certainly there's been no opportunity for someone like a Tate McDermott to get any continuity, someone who almost all Aussie rugby fans think is a real point of difference in that nine jersey and a real live wire. And if he's not starting, should certainly be coming off the bench every test. Noah Lolasio, our young 10, he's been, he wouldn't know whether he's coming or going, that guy, in terms of, the lack of continuity and selection. He started all the games against the French mid-year last year, then wasn't taken on the spring tour. Then he started all the games against England this year, barely featured during the rugby championship. And he was left on the bench last week against the Irish. And then Ben Donaldson, a one-cap rookie, picked ahead of him to start against Wales. So things like that, you look at the situation and you look at a Noah Lolasio, you look at a Tate McDermott, there's a few other, a Harry Wilson who wasn't taken on the spring tour, is probably the best performing back rower for Australia in Super Rugby. And the coaches have got to trust what they see in front of them every day in training. I get that. But the flip side of that, I think that when the results haven't been fantastic, you do have to call into question some of those selections and whether the end has justified the means. And I think at the moment, most Aussie rugby fans would probably favour continuity for Rennie. Winning the last game of the year probably helps, but there's two big coaches available out there right now on the international scene, and that's Scott Robertson and that's Ronan O'Gara. And we know that Wales are likely to be looking for a new coach. We know England will be at the end of the World Cup when Eddie Jones finishes. We know that New Zealand could be in the market for a new head coach. So if you had an indication that you could get either an O'Gara or a Robertson in now ahead of the World Cup and steal a march on those other big rivals, I think you'd have to give it genuine consideration.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. We'll keep an eye on that, mate. We'll ask you about Eddie Jones coming up shortly as well. We'll just take a break now for the latest in news and sport with Aroha, and then we'll come back with more from the other side of the ditch. This is SENZ Mornings with Ian Smith, 28 away from 11, brought to you by Brandt, your local John Deere equipment dealer. Ricardo Ball in for Smithy. Well, he is on Pete's side of the Tasman, part of the Fox crew calling the Windies Test Series. We'll talk a bit of cricket in a moment with Pete. But, Pete, I also wanted to ask you about Eddie Jones and how much news there has been around that, particularly after what has to have been seen as a very disappointing Northern Tour. Well, it's not a tour for England because they're there, but in terms of the games they've hosted, they didn't even look at the races against the Springboks, and the All Blacks should have put them away as well, but didn't. Eddie Jones, is he going to make the World Cup with England?
Well, it's an interesting one with Eddie. He's never far from the headlines, is he? And, you know, we know that he polarises opinion, you know, probably more so than any other figure in international rugby. So really disappointing autumn series for the English. And you'd say now, really, in Ireland, France, South Africa and New Zealand, most people think there's four genuine threats for next year's World Cup. And only 3 or 4 weeks ago, you would have included England in that mix. I think the question for Eddie is going to be whether he's able to still extract the best out of the players, and I think it will be pretty player driven if there is going to be any change there. In saying that, I think we talked about O'Gara and Robertson, and perhaps even Steve Borthwick's considered the English hope for that job at the end of the next World Cup. Are any of those guys really ready to come in with an England team, this close to a World Cup and with the amount of pressure that rides on that? And I think, with Robertson and O'Gara, the fact that they haven't coached in the Premiership, they haven't been around that type of environment with those players, it's a pretty tough ask for them to come in. And in the case of Borthwick, he's obviously got some international assistant coaching experience, but it'd be a pretty brave decision to get rid of Eddie Jones and bring Steve Borthwick in his place. So I think Eddie will probably get the stay of execution through to the World Cup. He has really selected a lot of players over the last 2 years, similar to Dave Rennie, in that there hasn't been great continuity around his selections. I think a middling Six Nations will be enough for him to stay in the job. So let's say, three wins would probably be enough for him to stay there, possibly even two. So I'd be surprised to see him get the boot before the World Cup. He's pretty steadfast in his belief of his philosophies and how they're going to translate to success. So I think he probably gets to hang around.
What about cricket over your side of the ditch, mate? I mean, you got the you just had that England series after the T20 World Cup, which seemed a bit of a weird one, just three ODIs after a T20 World Cup. And now you're into a test series against the Windies, followed by a test series against South Africa. Seems all a bit up in the air at the moment. How's the, you Aussies love your cricket, but I mean, what's the fandom like around the schedules? It seems random.
Yeah, look, we do love our cricket. We do love our cricket team, but there is a genuine sense of apathy around cricket at the moment. I think that three ODIs were viewed through a fairly cynical lens, and the fans voted with their feet. I think less than 20,000 went to the three games in Sydney, Adelaide, and then only just over 10,000 went to the game at the MCG, which was an awful look for the game. Really, really poor attendance when the stadium's one-tenth full. And then we're heading into, and this is the way the fixture works, right? But we head into a test series against a Windies team who have really flattered to deceive. They've really, really struggled to have an impact at test level for a number of years now. So expectations are pretty low there, and people are thinking that it's probably going to be a fairly one-sided contest. There's a lot of apathy around the Big Bash, which has only grown year on year. 61 games in the schedule. Most people would say that's about 21 or even 31 too many, that it drags on, that the calibre of players that the competition can attract, certainly from overseas, is significantly lower because people don't want to commit to a competition that goes for so long. And we've seen this year the international players, the majority of the ones who've come in through the draft system for the BBL will actually leave halfway through the series to then go and play in more lucrative competitions in either South Africa or Dubai. And I think that really shows where the Big Bash is currently sitting in people's estimations. And then finally, to top it all off, you've got this allegedly growing divide between the former Australian players and the current Australian players, off the back of the removal of Justin Langer as head coach earlier this year, which was driven by player power and the fact that he had lost the dressing room, and seen a number of former players and former teammates of Justin Langer's speak out in defence of him, and It's turned into a bit of a back and forth now that's being played out through the media. Justin Langer, you know, incredibly passionate man, but has had some pretty forthright things to say in the media in recent weeks around how he felt let down. You know, he said that the people who spoke publicly about him losing the dressing room were cowards. And you've got the situation now where he's joining the host broadcaster for the upcoming test series, which now they're having to talk about whether he's going to be allowed to interview players directly or he's going to be removed from discussions when current players are involved. So it's really nasty. Not the type of headlines Cricket Australia would be wanting heading into the summer. And after a couple of blockbuster summers with the likes of England and India in years gone by, might be a little bit of a down year for Aussie cricket.
Yeah, all right, mate. One of the conversations we're having here at the moment is, and Gary Stead was asked about it yesterday. Of course, the Black Caps are in a series with India. We've had three T20s. We've just had the second ODI, which was rained out. Most of it's been rain affected. There's been talk about playing and, you know, getting more roofed stadiums for cricket to play in around the world. There's been a chat. I know that there was a conversation during the T20 World Cup about why Marvel Stadium wasn't used more. Has there been much chat about that post that, and is that something you can see happening going forward?
There's been really very little chat about it, which is quite surprising when you think about the fact that the integrity of that entire competition was considered to be likely to be compromised, and we thought that there was a possibility that the final wouldn't be played at all, yet 5 kilometres down the road, you've got a stadium with a roof. For mine, you've got to innovate, you've got to move with the times. And, I think every stadium that's built moving forward will always have a roof. We know that. Some of the more famous stadiums, you know, like the MCG, maybe it is time to look at adding a roof to the mix. At the moment, it's easy to say we don't want to play under the roof because we've got a commercial agreement with this particular stadium that doesn't have a roof and is able to hold the most people. But I think that, you know, not only the amount of money spent, you know, taking people across to the other side of the world to play cricket, but, you know, just in general, in a crowded marketplace, the opportunity to make sure that you can continue to, to attract fans and that people want to come and watch your matches, you can't run the risk of matches being cancelled or rained off as often as they are in cricket. We know in AFL there's a lot of games played under the roof at Marvel Stadium. That's generally closed for pretty much every fixture, and that's not even due to rain. It's due to the angle of the sun coming in, and they just made a call pretty early doors after the construction of that stadium. We're playing AFL with the roof shut, and people thought it was weird. It's a bit eerie sitting in there on an afternoon, but what we see is we see a better quality of game. We know we don't cancel fixtures in rugby or in football or in any of these other sports because of rain. Really, cricket is and tennis are really the main ones. Tennis, we've got the Aussie Open, obviously, I think three or four courts now under a roof as well. I think cricket's got to innovate with the times, and I think I think a move to making sure that venues, you know, all new venues have roofs, but even looking at older venues and whether they can be renovated, I think is really important. I think Christchurch will be your newest venue over there in a couple of years. I presume that'll have a roof and that might have, you know, the opportunity, for things like that. That's a rectangular venue though, isn't it?
Mm, yeah, exactly, yeah.
So maybe a missed opportunity there for cricket.
Yeah, that's kind of what it feels like, mate. Hey, listen, before I let you go, I also wanted to talk to you quickly about Origin. I see Freddie Fittler has been chatting, and he's basically talked about the whole Tier 1, Tier 2 nations and Origin eligibility. He's basically said, look, if you grow up in either New South Wales or Queensland and go to high school there, that means you've been nurtured by those systems, and it doesn't matter who you play your international footy for, you should be allowed to play Origin. I know that he's probably got a horse in this race and this goes in his favour, but it does kind of make sense, and it would get rid of all that tricky eligibility chat, wouldn't it?
It makes perfect sense. I endorse it 110%, not only for the fact that it means that we don't have, you know, someone like a Victor Radley who's elected to play for England and therefore won't be involved in Origin moving forward, or a Jason Taumalolo who decided to play, you know, initially for New Zealand and then switch over to Tonga. I think we want the very best players available for State of Origin. I think the days of State of Origin being a selection match for the Kangaroos are well and truly long gone. And State of Origin, you know, it lives on its own. It's very unique in sport and what it represents. We want the very best players out there. But then I think also importantly, we want to actually see a spread of talent at an international rugby league level as much as players want to. So we don't want a player electing to play for Australia or electing to play for, you know, a tier two nation instead of another tier one nation just so they remain eligible for Origin. We want players playing for whichever country they are eligible for and they want to play for. And we know there's a lot of players in the NRL and in rugby league in general who have multiple cultures as part of their heritage. And I think it's great that they can have the opportunity to represent more than one of those cultures, you know, by playing, say, State of Origin and representing the state where they've grown up. And the criteria has got to be pretty strict, right? I think we've seen, you know, you have to have played rugby league in or for your state before the age of 13, which I think is a pretty good mark. But we'd love to see those players still feel like they could represent a New Zealand, an England, a Samoa, whoever that might be, without compromising their Origin selection chances. We also know that players playing test footy for tier two nations are getting far smaller match payments than they are if they play for a tier one nation. And maybe this is a way to, you know, they can still get those big tier one, all those big match payments from State of Origin while still playing international footy elsewhere. I endorse it wholeheartedly. I couldn't be more supportive of it.
Yeah, good stuff, Pete. Hey, listen, thanks very much for your time, mate. Go well, and we'll catch up with you again soon, eh?
Good on you, mate. Chat soon. Hooroo. Yeah.
Pete Fairburn there with us from Across the Ditch, now working with the Queensland Reds, has had jobs with the Rebels, Melbourne Rebels before as well, and was actually the Rugby Union Player Association media guy for some time. So it's pretty close to pro sport over there and has some interesting insights as well. It is 16 away from 11 here on SENZ.